someone does something to me, my automatic reaction is, oh shit, my work job. My automatic reaction is, I'm gonna do something to that guy. And it could draw me into a situation when really it's just not, I could say self-defense, but really it's just the normal way I might react to someone doing that outside of a stadium.
Yeah. 3-2 Arsenal. Arsenal finished third or second.
They're basically saying to Sterling, look, if you don't take this money, we can just buy another winger who's a former player of the year in the Premier, and we'll get 15 goals if you start him week in, week out, and he'll play there for the wages you're on right now, and we can shift you.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the podcast where we give football fans a real voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and on the pod this week I'm joined by a debutant, Arsenal fan Turkish. What are you saying, bro?
How's it going? How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for coming on. We're going to talk Arsenal in just a little bit. I'm also joined by my saviour for this week, Arsenal United fan Mike. What are you saying?
I'm good, man. All good.
I've had two cancellations in the last hour, so I gave Mike the call at the last second, and he very kindly agreed to come on and help me out. So cheers for coming on the pod tonight, Mike. Right, so before we get into the pod, we'd like to pass on our best, first of all, our best wishes to the former England and Tottenham player and manager Glenn Hoddle, who we all know now collapsed whilst doing some TV work on Saturday for BT Sport. We're told it was a very serious illness, a heart attack, I was told, but receiving the best possible treatment, and there are signs of recovery and they seem to be positive. So great news about Glenn Hoddle. A couple of Arsenal fans here, but you know, obviously when these sort of things happen,
yeah,
we don't really care about rivalries and that sort of thing. Health comes first. So on behalf of the Football Fans Podcast, we want to pass on our best to Glenn Hoddle and hopefully a speedy recovery. Saturday was a really, really, really bad day, because in the evening we've also found out that there was a tragic helicopter crash with the chairman of Leicester City after the Leicester West Ham game, which finished 1-1, which we also now know took the lives of five people, I believe, who were inside the helicopter, including the chairman. I want to speak to big Leicester City fan and broadcaster who was there at the game, Jeff Peters. Jeff, how you doing, mate?
Hi, guys.
Let's just get to it, man. First of all, tell us a little bit about what you saw and when you first realised something serious was happening.
Well, we'd done all our post-match duties after the game, which obviously pales completely and utterly into insignificance, but we did all the post-match stuff. And Claude Puel was doing the press conference, the written media, just getting packing up, ready to leave. I got a text saying there's been a crash outside the ground, possibly helicopter. And you're saying, no, it can't be. So a few of us journalists went round the side of the stadium. There's people coming towards us, and in the distance you could see these flames leaping into the cold night sky about 8:40 in the evening. And you knew it was something serious, but you, at that moment you didn't know what it was. I took the journalist in me said, we have to take a video of this. And then once we were all, ambulances came flying past and other emergency personnel, and we were all shepherded back around the stadium and back into the press room, and news filtered through that it was quite likely to be the owner's helicopter. And suddenly it just hits you, and you know there's journalists of many years standing visibly shaken, shocked. You don't know what to make of it. We came to watch a football match, to talk and write about a football match, sendings off, goals, managers' comments, hamstring injuries, and suddenly we were thrust into this awful situation where we didn't know exactly what had happened, but we knew that it was an absolute tragedy. And then more information came through throughout the evening. And I mean, the game finished at 7:30. The accident was 8:30, 8:20 to 9:00. I finally left after doing some of my broadcast work, maybe about 1:45 in the morning. I decided that, you know, we probably weren't going to get any more information. I should head home. Fortunately, I don't live too far from the ground. I wasn't even sure whether I'd be able to get to my car.
Mm.
It was a confused, horrible, scary situation, which you just knew pretty soon after, this was not going to have a happy conclusion to it.
We've seen today on the television, obviously, all the tributes and flowers that have been laid outside the stadium. And we saw the Leicester City squad and coaching staff there as well and paying their respects. What's been, I don't know if you've been in and around Leicester today, but what's been the general atmosphere amongst Leicester City fans, but also just general people who live and are from the city?
Well, I was pretty much all day yesterday and all day there again today with various media duties for Talk Sport, Talk Sport 2, Talk Radio, BN Sports, CNN, Fox in Australia, and just trying to give a flavour of what it was, of what it's been like. And you know, I think I was there about 8:15 this morning, and it's now coming up to 7:00 in the evening. I've just literally got home, so it's been another long day. But it's as terrible and as sad as it has been, the warmth that you felt from other Leicester City fans who are all in the same boat. We're all, yeah, I'm a broadcaster, but this A is a human tragedy for everybody, and B, it's my club, and it's very personal to me. And seeing all the tributes, the words people have written on shirts, the number of flowers. And it, you know, it's not just people from Leicester. I've been chatting to Derby and Forest fans today, so we've been down there in the shirts, or someone in a Liverpool top, someone in a West Ham top. The other shirts there from clubs here, in this country. I think there was a Barcelona scarf there as well, something from Italy. And it just goes to show that this the kind of thing unites the football family, because nobody wants a tragedy like this at their own football club, and nobody wants this kind of tragedy in life in general. And the feeling from the fans that I've been interviewing today and speaking to, and seeing a lot of friends, everybody just sort of hugging strangers. It's the complete opposite. It's the same, but the complete opposite from 2.5 years ago, when thousands of us turned up at the stadium on the night that Chelsea drew with Spurs, that Leicester were crowned champions. And there were strangers hugging each other, looking at each other in bewilderment. What the hell has just happened? But it was a happy bewilderment. And then over the past couple of days, it's fans looking at each other in complete bewilderment. What has just happened? The complete opposite from that. I've talked about it being 2.5 years ago, the highest high for the football club. This weekend is without question the lowest low for Leicester City.
I hear that. And just finally, Jeff, I don't think as football fans we're naive enough to think that football owners and chairmen take over clubs out of the goodness of their heart, that there's a business and they take over football clubs to make money. And I know your chairman was no different in that sense. But what seems to be very different, and listening to a lot of the Leicester City fans talk about him today, is that, yeah, he was there to make money first and foremost, but he seemed to also really get the city and seemed to also personally invest a lot of his time and energy into Leicester City football fans and Leicester the city itself. What did he mean to the club? I know that obviously he brought the ultimate 2.5 years ago, as you mentioned, to your club. But beyond the trophy, what did this man bring to the people of Leicester?
Did he come to Leicester to make money? Well, he's been there 8 years. I would suspect the money he has invested in the club, in the stadium, in the infrastructure, in the players, in the training ground, in this new training ground on the way, looking at extending the stadium, I almost guarantee that he has not come close to recouping anywhere near that level of money from football. There may have been a lot of benefits for his businesses elsewhere around the world, with and obviously Leicester winning the title. But away from that, as a man, he never wanted to hog the limelight. He wasn't someone who did lots of interviews. He didn't love the sound of his own voice that he had to get out. Then we know there are lots of owners that are like that. But he treated supporters as supporters and human beings and members of his extended family, because he loved the club, and anyone who loved the club, as far as he was concerned, he loved them too. So many freebies he gave away: season tickets, beer, cakes, donuts, pizza, shirts, scarves, pay for away travel, did so many things that you might get occasionally once from a football club. They did this on a constant basis. He connected with the fans. He would stop for a selfie in the club shop. It would take time to talk to people. How many owners do that? There's a very special bond between the supporters of Leicester City and Tunvishai, and also the city as well, because he donated millions of pounds to local charities and did many, many wonderful things. He'll be missed deeply and greatly, not only by his immediate family, but the Leicester City family and Leicester as a whole. And I think, you know, we should also sort of pay tribute to the other people that were on the plane as well. The heroic pilot that avoided any further catastrophe. Of course, you know, massive, massive tragedy. It could have been a hell of a lot worse. It's a city that I've lived in all my life. It's a city that is in some ways fractured and will take time to heal. But we will be strong and we are together. And his memory will never, ever be dimmed. And we thank him so much for that.
Amen to that. You must be knackered. I know you've been doing a lot of work and broadcasting over the weekend because of this tragedy. Hope you get some rest. And I know there's talk about the game on the weekend being postponed against, I think it's Cardiff, if you've got that correct.
Cardiff? I think it would probably make sense to postpone that.
Yeah.
I don't think the players would be in any right frame of mind. The players and the owner, by the way, and a unique, strong bond. If you saw the words Kasper Schmeichel posted on social media, on Twitter, you read that is really deep stuff. You don't often get that from footballers and owners, maybe to a manager, well, maybe not even that, but to just incredible words from some of the players. They all got on so well. One big family.
Jeff, thanks for your time, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Cheers, pal. Yes, the Leicester chairman Vishal Shanahana Pravra, was he one of five passing away in that tragedy on the weekend. Obviously, our thoughts are with the families, the fans, and anybody else affected by that tragedy. Okay, let's start now with our first topic of the pod, guys. I want to talk about Mr. Raheem Sterling.
Okay,
the City winger, England attacker. And it's well known that he is into the last 18 months of his contract. And Madrid are sniffing. I hear that Barca are sniffing. And City seemed a bit reluctant to offer him the contract, bearing in mind what he's demanding and what he wants. He wants to be in that top bracket of earners at City with the Agüeros and the Kevin De Bruyne's, and I'm just not quite sure that City want to quite pay him that money. Start with you, Mike. Do you think Raheem Sterling is worthy of a contract that puts him in that De Bruyne and Agüero pay bracket?
Yeah.
Go on, why?
If you look towards their season last year, as important as Aguero, Kevin De Bruyne was, and Aguero actually, both of them, Sterling's output was phenomenal. And I didn't actually realise how good it was until this season when people started putting up stats about his last contributions in like the last 50 games or so. And I was looking, I was like, whoa. Because I'm not someone that really looks at stats. I like to look at how you play as in the performance level. But you can't ignore the stats. The goals and the assists he was scoring, creating, helped lead to the title big time. Huge. It cannot be underestimated. His overall play has improved so much. Talking about the one thing people talk about is his finishing, but at the end of the day, he's talking about his movement, how he gets into the end of goals, tap-ins, but you have to get there somehow. You have to read the game. You have to read where the ball's going and make yourself be in the right position. His creativity's gone up. And just the way he reads the game, you can see he's become a smarter footballer. I had a discussion with Joe. He came in here before, a Liverpool fan. And he said to me that he feels like Sterling was that player at Liverpool, but he's just gone to City and he's in the same sort of city, he's in a system where it works for him a bit more. I used to agree with that, but then when you look at how much he's improved in the team, City look different when he's not playing. Like, very different. Whether it's Bernardo,
but didn't they win 5-0 last week and he didn't come on?
Yeah, because they can beat those. They can beat everyone. I mean, was that Cardiff they played?
Was it Cardiff? I forgot who it was now. But
I forgot it was. Yeah, but you know they can do that. But I mean, in terms of, there's just a certain way that he moves around the pitch and the dimension he adds to the attacking third. You know what Sané is about. Sané is a direct winger. He's going to stay out wide. He's going to drive at you, and then maybe cut in once in a while and have a shot, whatever. Riyad Mahrez is a fantastic dribbler. He's definitely going to cut in. You know what he's doing. Same as Bernardo Silva. Sterling has this thing where he can play left, right, behind the striker, sometimes up top, which he did last season. And it's because the way his brain moves, it keeps ticking, the way he keeps moving around the pitch. There's something about his play that's improved so much that I feel like in the biggest games, this boy has to play. You cannot bench this boy. You have to play him because he adds something on top of what the other guys can do and makes it better. And there's no surprise to me as to why Madrid and Barca want him.
Wow, you've really picked him up there.
I don't like bigger city players, but this is, I can't lie to myself right now.
on that point, I was going to ask you, Turkish, is he good enough for Madrid? Madrid need freshening up, and I think they will go hard. Maybe even January they might go hard.
You build around him, he's good enough.
You think in a Real Madrid team, Raheem Sterling, he could be the guy?
Yeah, because Real Madrid are not like Barcelona, where it's about interchanging, tiki-taka, close control passing, whereas Raheem wouldn't suit that. But with Real, they like pace, counter, power. And he does bring most of that with him. The only issue is he's not a main man, and I disagree with Mike and say that he doesn't deserve what De Bruyne and Aguero get.
Okay, go on, why?
I just feel the opposite of what Mike said. I feel he is he's easier to replace than a De Bruyne or Aguero.
Go on.
But the main thing is, I feel like De Bruyne and Aguero or David Silva can take an average team to the cusp of being a great team or a good team, whereas Sterling at an average team would become part of the furniture.
But hang on, you said that you think that Real Madrid would mess with him, but you don't think he deserves the top whack at Manchester City.
Yeah.
Because if he goes to Madrid, he'll get what Aguero and De Bruyne are getting.
Potentially.
He'll be in that bracket.
Potentially. Even the Spanish clubs don't spend as much. England are blowing Spain out of the war in terms of money now, hence why Real can't buy like they used to. But a lot of players take pay cuts to go to Real and Barca because of Real and Barca. I know this for Fabregas, took a pay cut, 50 grand a week less to go to Barca. I know a few other players, Suarez done that from Liverpool to Barca. So if he can get the money, all the better go. It's a bigger club. You have more. You still carry on your name, your brand, your football. Yeah. You're gonna win stuff. But he brings the things he brings. I don't see if you put Zaha in his position at
the
City,
you think it'll be the same.
I think it'd be pretty much the same.
So you don't. So you. Wow. Okay.
Wait,
so you don't think his contribution to that City team is worthy of him? Because I think he's playing a game here. I think he knows that Real Madrid and Barcelona potentially and most likely will pick him up if City drop the ball here. So I think he's saying to City, if you don't pay me that 300, 250, 300 grand a week, I know I can get it at a bigger club than you. So he's in a very good position. But you still don't think they should budge?
And I think he potentially did try and play that game with City. I think he rejected his first contract at the end of last season or January last season. And I feel like they countered that with buying Mahrez. First they offered for him end of January, it didn't work out, they bought him in the summer. They're basically saying to Sterling, look, if you don't take this money, we can just buy another winger who's a former player of the year in the Prem, and we'll get 15 goals if we start him week in, week out, and he'll play there for the wages you're on right now, and we can shift you then. So I feel like the ball is in Sterling's court.
But the English quota is currency as well. So he's bringing that as an Englishman in that City squad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For quota purposes. So I think he's personally got... I think he's playing a good game here. And I think if we look, Mike, back to his time at Liverpool, played a similar game there as well in terms of... He was about his value. I know what I'm worthy of.
Yeah.
I know that I can get this money at City. Either pay me the money that I want or I'm kicking. And he's doing it again. And fair play to him.
You know what I mean? There's a dangerous thing about that. It's because at a club like Real Madrid, if something starts to go wrong for you, they will bin you fast. At Liverpool, City wanted him, and it wasn't a huge risk in terms of, you know, if he goes to City and what happens if it doesn't go right, where can he go? I'm sure you'll be able to find a club. But at Madrid, if you were to go to Madrid, I mean, even with some of their legends that they've had in the past, I mean, Ronaldo just left. Ronaldo would score 50, 60, have one bad game, and they hate his guts. Gareth Bale has come and made an impact, helped you win Champions Leagues. He gets injured, get rid of him. Iker Casillas was benched and they forgot about him. And like he was a bum.
Like he was some any guy.
You know, that the club is so... They're
ruthless.
Oh, so ruthless. And that's a problem for me, is that if he was to go to a Real Madrid, and
he'd have to play a nine every game.
You have to perform, especially look at how they are right now. The difference between maybe 5 years ago and now is the fact that, one, they were powerless to keep in Ronaldo. That's the first time in a long time that they've looked at themselves and said, "Wow, we can't keep our man. Like, we actually can't keep him." And then our manager, on top of that, said, "I'm out. You can't do anything about it. I'm gone." We couldn't persuade him, and then Perez looked hopeless, and he looking hopeless in his head. He doesn't know what to do with that situation. So if he was to join now, it wouldn't be ultimately scary, because I feel like the players would have a lot more over everyone else. But again, if they start to get that power back and they start to improve, and then you are not the guy part of that improvement, they're going to get on your neck really fast. And I don't think he could cope with that kind of pressure. That's my one thing about him. I feel like under that kind of pressure at Madrid, he would crumble.
But sorry, Mike, United, yeah, let's say you cared about the money now. Before I ask this question, you care about the money you spend on wages, because it could potentially stop you strengthening elsewhere, yeah?
Yeah.
Would you sign Sterling on 300-350k a week?
Oh, hell no.
So then you're basically saying what I'm saying
is because City are in a situation where I feel like they can pay that money. I feel like they think that they're bigger than they are. And because they're saying to Sterling, "Oh, if you want to play that game, we offer you a contract," feeling that you deserve that contract, not more. We can give you more, but you don't deserve that much, because Aguero has, from day one, he joined City, 30 goals consistently, just ridiculous, with injuries included in the season, he's been ultra consistent, and KDB's impact at City has, he can't be understated.
Is it that, or do you think they're just worried about setting a precedent? They're worried about if Sterling gets 300 grand a week, then Silva's like, "Well, hang on a minute, I want 300
grand
a week."
Well, it's kind of their fault, because they've been one of the few clubs that have offered stupid wages for a long time. I mean, Mangala's not being bought by anyone because people look at them and say, "I can't pay him what you're offering
200
him.
Grand a week."
You know, that's the whole precedent. I mean, Tottenham used to do that. They had Adebayor, they gave him a big contract, and even after he left, they were still paying him.
Mm.
So they've put themselves in that kind of situation by themselves. That's their issue. So of course Stern's going to look at that and say, "Look at all the goals and assists I've contributed. You cannot downplay my contribution to the team. I know the other two guys have been fantastic, but so have I. So I feel like I deserve that wage. If you're not going to give it to me, and I know a club will give it to me, then
I'm in a good position."
Yeah.
Would you take it? Would you take a 250k a week at City, or would you leave and go to 300k a week at City, or would you go to Madrid for 50k less?
Would I? Being an Arsenal fan, I'd go in Madrid. Just
okay. If you were him,
if I was him, I'd still go Madrid.
Yeah,
he doesn't support City. He might as well. Madrid's the pinnacle of,
even though that Pep's there, City are on the cusp of something special potentially for the next 2-4 years. You think that you would jump ship, and also factoring what Mike said earlier on about the ruthlessness at Real Madrid. If you have one bad year, you're not eating bench, you're gone.
But if the way I see it, if I'm Sterling and I'm putting City in this predicament, I believe I am good enough to go Real and shut shit down. So yes, I'd go Real. If I feel like I'm good enough for that wages at City, then I must be good enough to go and win the Champions League with Real. Forget what City's project is. Real Madrid's project every season is win Champions League and win the league.
That's the big difference between the two sides.
Yeah, so forget the project at City. Every year, it's the same project that Real Madrid. And maybe he feels like it could be potential to step up, or I would feel potential to step up to a more pressurized scenario. It might bring more out of me. Like City have brought more out of him after Liverpool, which has surprised me. I didn't feel like he would progress like he's progressed after Liverpool. I thought it would just be another Englishman that reaches the ceiling and he doesn't get past that. But he has grown.
He gets a lot of bad press as well, Turkish, from the media. Liverpool fans obviously still hate him. And I think there's a large section of football fans that don't like him as well. I still buy into the whole, I think, the young, black, successful, rich narrative that a lot of people in this country don't like. Is that a factor, do you think, in if he did leave, or do you just think if he did go to Madrid, it'll be purely because it's Real Madrid?
I don't believe it's a factor, you know, because that's just the way things are right now in this country. And even as a pundit, even as someone from Arsenal Fan TV, if you look through some of my comments, you'll get the same, "Oh, why does he talk like that?" or where was he raised, or mm-hmm. where's his English, just because I come from a different social mm-hmm. background. As, mm-hmm. So it's the same for Sterling. And the way I look at it is I don't give a toss what people think about mm-hmm. me. So if I was making the money Sterling's making, I should hope he doesn't give a toss either. And I assume he doesn't, because yeah. he does what he wants to do. I know that gun tattoo was the last big thing, but I admire the meaning behind it. I actually do admire the meaning behind that tattoo. Mm. But no one wants to hear it, because that's just the way English mm. media is, and yeah. the general public that read that media or read into that media are. So
okay. And do you think it'd be good for England if they had someone like Raheem Sterling playing on the continent, especially for a team like Real Madrid?
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I mean, I don't know if it'll do anything special for the England squad, but it'll be nice. I mean, you've got this now. There's a lot.
Well,
more.
They'll have a talisman. I know they've got Harry Kane to a degree, but if Sterling went to Madrid and was the guy at Madrid for a couple of years, yeah. he could bring that into the England fold. You'd hope.
I remember when David Beckham left United to go to Real Madrid, and it was Real Madrid star. David Beckham star always came after. It was like star, star, star. So they'd lord it. They'll be like, yeah, you know, he's a Real Madrid star right now. We have to use that and keep going on with it. So I think they would use it, but it'll be good, because on top of all the other English players now that are going to play abroad as well, that are now getting better. You can see with Sancho, for example, you know, he could actually get better at Madrid. It depends what kind of level of training, but I mean, if you look at the two last stars, I'd say Beckham and Bale going to Madrid, their level of improvement, Beckham improved big time, and I didn't even realise it until I started watching him properly. I was like, whoa, you've upped your game. And then Gareth Bale not only upped his physique, but the way he played was out of this world.
We'll see how he gets on. I think he's probably also waiting to see who the manager is going to be, because Lopetegui's gone. By the time this podcast is out in the morning, I'm sure he'll be gone. Hearing Solari is going to be put in temporary charge until they can find someone in the summer, from what I'm told. So that might also affect Sterling. Like, you know, if David Moyes rocked up at Real Madrid, then Sterling ain't going to Real Madrid, you know what I mean, sort of thing. We'll see who'll be taking over there. Let's move on to our next one, gents. Let's talk about alcohol inside grounds. I want to find out from you guys if you think that alcohol should be reintroduced inside grounds. Both of you are regular match going football fans. The ban was imposed in the 80s after a culture of hooliganism that crept into the English game back in the day, and it's stood since then. But there's talks now from, I know, the Scottish League and the Football League. The heads of those federations are campaigning to get fans allowed to drink alcohol inside the grounds. Do you think it should be reintroduced, Turkish?
No,
why not?
From a personal standpoint, yeah, because I'd like to drink while watching the game. But from a general perspective, I don't feel like people handle their drink well. And I don't like the culture it brings when people are drunk. And especially now with the cameras at all the games and it's all televised, and it can have an impact on your professional working life. So I feel like me, especially the way I've been perceived as an Arsenal fan, if people were drinking in the stadiums as well, and at the time when I was wearing the Wenger out shirt or holding a banner, it could have been a lot worse than what it was. Instead of someone trying to grab the banner out of my hand and saying a few F-offs or whatever, it could have been a bottle to the head, or it could have been anything. When people are drunk, anything can happen. So from that standpoint, I definitely don't. They need to address other areas before they address the drinking in the stadiums. I feel like everyone sits down now, so them drinking would really not make sense to me, because there's no standing area, unless they make that standing area drinking area too. And
yeah.
The people that buy them tickets might pay 10-20 pound more for that ticket, because you can drink there, but you're all in one section, you know what to expect.
Mike, football's entertainment, it is nowadays. And, you know, other fans of other sports will say, well, hang on a minute, when I go to the rugby, we drink. When I go to the cricket, they drink. For pretty much every other sport, you can watch your sport and drink.
Yeah.
If I want to combine my sport watching with my entertainment watching, which is what football is now, part of that process for, I don't drink, but for many people, is having a beer.
Yeah.
Why should it? Do you think, first of all, it should be reintroduced?
No.
No?
No.
Are you a drinker?
No.
Is that why you're saying no?
No. No, because I...
Are you hating Mike?
No. No, because I go to... Sometimes I even go to like games like Dagenham and Redbridge, and they sell alcohol there. That's not a problem for them. And, you know, the fans are cool. They drink the alcohol. They celebrate when their team wins, or if they don't, they get mad and that's it. They're cool. But I've been to games where, like, 5 minutes in, you have drunk fans. You know, one guy's, oh, you're shouting too much, shut up. And then this guy says something and goes from 0 to 1,000. And then there's a fight. I went to England versus Ireland, I think, 3 years ago. And within 5 minutes, I took to my left down there, and this guy's just scrapping. And you could see they were so, so drunk. And they got escorted.
I mean, to be fair, that could have been a fight even without the alcohol.
Yeah, true, true, true. True. But that fueled it even more, you know what I mean? Yeah. That fueled it even more. And they got thrown out. And that's actually more of a concern for me, is the fact that you spent so much money to go and watch a football game, and then you've consumed alcohol, which is your right to do so, but you've consumed alcohol and you've gone maybe a bit over the top with it and you're drunk, and then there's a situation where in your mind at that moment you don't like that, and then it makes you mad, and then you go and start scrapping. And what he said about, you know, cameras, and you can be found, your person, you can find out who you are in a second. It's easy with the internet. It's very easy.
That's a good thing then. If you act like an idiot because you're drunk and you're caught on camera, your ticket is, you know, you're banned for the rest of the season.
Oh, you damn well deserve
that cameras having so many cameras, that makes it a good thing, surely.
Oh yeah, you damn well deserve it. But in terms of just your personal life, it can screw you up.
Well, that's your problem.
Exactly. So
don't get drunk.
No, but I prefer, in the sense of, it can draw someone out, because if someone does something to me, my automatic reaction is, oh shit, my work job. My automatic reaction is, I'm going to do something to that guy. And it could draw me into a situation when really it's just not, I could say self-defense, but really it's just the normal way I might react to someone doing that outside of a stadium, of cameras.
See, but here's my thing. That's a good point. But here's my thing now. I think now that surely we're at a point that if you treat people like adults, generally they'll act like adults. Now, you're going to get occasional idiots. You'll get that at rugby, cricket, anywhere. There's idiots everywhere. But if you treat the majority of people like adults, say, look, we're going to let you drink. And we're going to let you drink in the knowledge that you will conduct yourself in a certain manner, like adults. There's kids, there's women here. Conduct yourself properly and we can all get along. If you treat people like they're kids by banning the alcohol, then they're more likely to act like children now? Or am I being too optimistic there?
I feel you might be being a little bit optimistic, because football fans in general don't tend to be the most...
But is that because we treat them like idiots and we treat them like thugs? They act like thugs.
It could be. I mean, some people would like to do the whole...
If I come to your house and your house is spotless and I walk in, I'm taking my shoes off straight away, because I see my surroundings and I think I've got to pattern this how I come in your house.
Oh yeah.
If I come into your house and your house is a dirt hole, then I might... Do you know what I mean?
So if you
treat people a certain way, give them a certain environment, they might actually buy into that environment.
I feel like the best... I don't know if there's some sort of system they could... Because it's tough to measure everyone's unit of drinking. You can't restrict everyone because you don't know how they're going to do it. If there's like a ticket system where it's like you bring your ticket as you come to the kiosk and you say, I want that. This a pint of whatever, and then
that could work. When you're buying your ticket, if you say add 2 drinks onto that ticket, so you scan it twice and that's your 2 drinks, that could work.
That could, yeah, so you're limited enough, you know, because then you can enjoy.
If you're lightweight
then it's a problem. It's a problem, but that, at least that limits it, because you know it's like when you're doing online shopping and you want to buy paracetamol, they tell you can buy 2 and that's it. Because their worry is, if you buy more than 2, what are you doing? If they come up with a system where they can sort of regulate it, you know, some fans might not be delighted with that, but you still get to enjoy the drink that you want to drink.
Yeah, like you get drunk fools now, and it's only pints that they sell here and there.
Yeah.
But you get drunk fools now, and I'm sure you.
But is that because they're tanking up pre-game because they know they can't drink inside?
Probably, yeah. So just making it legal for the whole stadium to be selling it would just add fuel to that fire. Do you know what I mean? And they've made it more family orientated, these home stadiums now, anyway. So they'd be going the other way to. But I love the way football stadiums used to be. I grew up on that Highbury, everyone standing, everyone drunk. Like I grew up on seeing that and asking my granddad, like, why are these men acting like kids and so happy and just jumping up and down? But I wish it could go back to that. It could, but then I mean, as an Arsenal fan, what I witnessed last season between fans, I'm probably the wrong person asking Arsenal fans this question about alcohol now. Probably isn't the right time. I feel like we need a good few years of unity as fan base before that could even be introduced, because it could have gone mad the last 2 years with alcohol.
But coming, Arsenal fans were just being idiotic generally, period. That division was... Those fights weren't alcohol based.
No, but if there was alcohol on top of them, there would have been much more issues. There was fights in the stadium with no alcohol.
I saw some pretty bad fights. Can they have got any worse with alcohol?
Yeah, definitely. Because you just think, because alcohol gives people with no balls balls. So all of a sudden, you've got the whole stadium with balls ready to
get brave. The government has said no. They've reviewed it, I believe, and said no. They're trying to get it reviewed again. They've said that the Home Office spokesman says this is an important piece of public order legislation, which specifically, put my teeth in, applies to designated football matches because of football's unique public order risks, which is why I talk about other sports seem to be able to conduct themselves okay. And I get that there's a particular type of football fan that goes to football games as opposed to rugby, cricket. I've, as a sports reporter, covered the Ashes before. I've never in my life seen people drink so much. Like, it's insane how much they drink.
That's true.
But they control themselves. And there's no fights. There's no... It never kicks off. It's always like jolly. They chuck it and they're like, hey! But it never crosses that line. And that's why I kind of think to myself, do they not cross the line? Is it A, because of their social backgrounds? They come from a particular part of society whereby they know how to conduct themselves, whereas football fans generally don't? Or is it because they're allowed to conduct themselves like adults? So they know, I'm going to get drunk, but I know that I'm not crossing that line.
I feel like some of these sports, in terms of creating an atmosphere, is very different to football. I mean, cricket's a quiet sport. You know, you're not really encouraged to make much noise whilst they're going. Same as tennis. As soon as they start going, you can't talk. You can't make a noise. Mm-hmm. It needs to be quiet. I haven't been to a rugby game before, so I can't really comment on how it is at rugby.
They drink a lot there as well.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, though. Yeah.
I've been to plenty.
It might just be a thing where, you know, with football, there's such a big thing about atmosphere, and they might be worried that, you know, you guys want to make it like a scary place for a team to come to, so you make it intimidating. I mean, you saw the thing with the whole bus, was it City and Liverpool?
Love that.
That kind of thing.
Love that.
That thing, that atmosphere that they're talking about, you know, imagine if all the fans were drunk in that moment. God knows.
I don't think that was drunk. That was just idiots.
No, it was idiots. They were pure idiots that was doing that for no reason.
They weren't drunk. They were just, it might be drunk, but that wasn't fueled by alcohol.
Yeah, not the smash of the bus, but I love the smoke, the crowd smoke in the street.
That's cool, yeah.
That was creating that atmosphere. I love that. Cool. They didn't need to smash the bus because you need the bus to get there and play the game that you're hyping up, so you don't do that. But the smoke flares.
But you said the smoke thing, the thing I found ironic about the smoke thing, and this is why I thought the smoke thing was pretty dumb, because if you watching the videos, if you're driving that bus and you can't see, if that bus goes into the pavements, who's going to knock down? Liverpool fans.
Yeah,
so if you can't see where you're driving, it's all well and good like creating the atmosphere and but if you're driving into smoke, you're going to it weren't City fans out there
in moderation. I guess.
Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
So I was a bit like, do you know what you're doing, guys, here? And just finally, UEFA, I don't know if you've been to Champions League game, guys, but they've lifted their ban in the Champions League and in the Europa League. But they said for English stadiums, alcohol is allowed in the wider stadium, but not in the actual stands. Because I was thinking to myself, well, how do they get around that in European games? Yeah. But that's how they do it. So in European games, you can drink. I've not been to a Champions League game for a couple of about a year, but you can drink in the what do they call it? But
where you buy it?
Where you buy it? Yeah, but you're not allowed to go to your seat with it. So we'll see. I personally think that it could be carnage. Yeah. It could be carnage. It could go badly wrong. But I also just, I'm a big believer in treating people.
And I'm with you. I agree with you. That sentiment. That's why I said personally, I'd say yes, do it. Because I agree with you. Treat me like I'm going to treat you the same way you treat me. I'll give respect to people that respect me. That's exactly how I am. But then I've seen the other side of people that lose themselves in that. So I'd say nah.
It just takes one idiot.
Because I go matches, I don't want to be in a situation that arises where I've seen something that shouldn't be happening just because of alcohol. Or like, there's enough trouble outside stadium nowadays.
This is true. Right, let's move on now, guys. Let's now go to our final debates of the day. Let's talk about Arsenal. I've got an Arsenal fan here. Turkish, I know you were at the game yesterday.
Yeah.
The 2-2 draw, yes, with Crystal Palace. I want to ask you, we'll get to the game in just a second, but I want to ask you, and obviously Mike as well, I want to ask you, will Arsenal get third this season? Because it's been a good start to the season. Will Arsenal this year get third?
I don't think so, no.
Go on, why not?
I'm taking every game as it comes, first and foremost. Before the season, I didn't see top four as a genuine way of getting into the Champions League for us. I saw Europa League as the main focal point of our season. And that's to give Emery the best playing ground, give him Champions League next year, give him a bigger budget, let him move forward again. But with Man United's indifferent form and Tottenham's, will they move into the stadium, won't they? And their form, even though it's their best start in however many years, they're still in and around the same position we're in. And that wasn't really expected this season. So, top four, if you ask me, will Arsenal finish fourth? That's a better question for me, because then, yeah, we can finish.
I'm aiming higher. Let's go higher.
But Chelsea, I just feel like, look, Liverpool and City, they was guaranteed top two. But it seems like Chelsea's form, even yesterday, Hazard wasn't playing and they still 4-0 away. I know Burnley are in not the greatest form.
Not many teams. Was it away? Was it was it at Burnley?
Yeah, it was
to go to Burnley and bang four is not
without your main man.
It's not easy. That's not easy.
Yeah. So like that's who I see.
You think it's a battle for Champions League spot? Us Spurs and United scrapping out for fourth, and you think that Arsenal will get that fourth spot?
Yeah.
Oh, there was a delay there.
Yeah, it's because obviously all of a sudden you said you think Arsenal. I hope we can, because it's possible now. Like I said a few months ago, I wouldn't have said it's possible. But looking at it now, it's definitely possible. Will we get it? It's just another... Look, this Liverpool game coming up this weekend is very important. Massive. Very... Look, I'm not one of these people to say our run is being in full of these lesser teams. I'm not one to say that, because otherwise, why isn't every club in the world going on a 10-11 game winning streak? It just doesn't happen as often as people like to put down what we've done.
Do other teams have that bank of fixtures to have that 10 game run?
I didn't see that bank of fixtures being a poor run of fixtures, like poor teams. In the Premiership, everyone says it's the hardest league in the world. It's the most competitive, and 20th can beat second or 19th can beat first. It's all of a sudden now Arsenal are doing well. It's but they're not the best
team. It's
teams.
A minor. No, I hear you.
At the same time, Jordan, you know, as Arsenal fans, we're not. Beating these smaller teams right now is an improvement for us.
That's a massive step up.
Consistently.
I'm going to come to you in a minute, Mike, but I want to bring in Arsenal legend, former Arsenal striker, Kevin Campbell. Kevin, what are you saying?
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
I'm very good, mate. I stuck to my word. You said you want to come in one of our debates, so I thought, you know, I'm going to bring in a debate, because this week we're talking Arsenal, and I want to get your opinion on the run. And Turkish is kind of echoing a lot of what I was saying in terms of pre-season. I thought we were well off fourth. I would have said, you know, fifth or sixth for Arsenal. I think United's form and Tottenham winning but not looking great has given Arsenal a sniff of getting Champions League football. How do you interpret the run, and how high is the ceiling for Arsenal this season?
Well, I'm loving the run. I love the fact that the media are trying to put down what Arsenal are doing. That tells us something. Yeah. That tells us that Arsenal are on the right track. We know what our failures are. We know we need certain positions to be filled in the transfer windows. But we're riding on the crest of a wave at the moment. I thought the draw yesterday was quite fair, 2-2 at Palace, and we're 12 unbeaten. That's 11 wins and one draw. If anybody would have offered that to us earlier on in the season, we would have taken it after the first two games. So that's my thoughts on that one right now.
Mike, you've got three Arsenal fans here. You're a United fan. Now, we're just getting a bit gassed up. No. On Saturday we've got Liverpool. Is it going to be just same old Arsenal?
No, if you beat Liverpool, then you're getting top four. I'm that certain.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, I said that I think Arsenal can compete for some trophies. It wasn't the league, but I feel like they've got the capacity to compete for the trophies. Because going forward, always scary. What I liked about what Emery was doing was the first thing he tried to address was goalkeeper, defense, defensive midfielder. Got two out of three in terms of defensive midfielder and goalkeeper set. Obviously Socrates is still settling in, but he's improved game by game. And Nick Schneider is just literally a competition for Bellerin. He needs that competition. If you're too comfortable, you're not going to get better, and you can see his end product's improved. And if anyone knows about Emery, is that when he was at Sevilla, when he went to PSG, within the first couple of months, his imprint on the team in terms of what he wants them to do and how he wants them to play, it didn't take long.
So you're not surprised that it's not taking this long
And what Kevin said about people talking about the run. See, this thing, you beat who you have to beat. because a lot of Liverpool fans, and they're the ones trying to debate a lot of Arsenal, saying, no, you're getting an easy run, all that kind of stuff. Liverpool were able to beat the big teams in the past, and when it came to the small teams, they couldn't do a thing.
They slipped up
big time. So the fact that Arsenal are, whether they're facing all these teams or they're facing Barcelona and then Champions League and then Liverpool on the weekend or whatever, regardless, they're winning games, they're getting W's,
yeah,
and they got a draw, so they're not crumbling. They're up there, and as much as people are excited about City and Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal are literally toe to toe with them. They haven't gone anywhere, so why are we getting so excited about those two and leaving everybody out? These guys are still coming for your neck, and Arsenal are doing their thing.
I hear you. Turkish, you travel to most games.
Yeah.
You've seen most games this season. What's different? What for you? What are you seeing that's different from last year? I mean, I know that there's certain players that have improved, but what for you are you seeing that is the key reason as to why Arsenal have done so well so far this season?
Honestly, yeah, I think it's the unknown. I think under Wenger, it became a bit of a same old story every season.
Predictable.
So even after our transfer window this summer, it didn't light up the Premier League. It was a similar transfer window. We've spent about 50 mil. Mm. It wasn't anywhere close to the big boys of the league. But the difference was we have a new manager. And we've gone on these runs under Wenger previously. 6-7 games unbeaten, wins here. And it's just the fact that we know come the end of the season under Wenger, it was all going to fall apart. Now under Emery, going on this run, we don't know what's around the corner. Mm. Potentially, a league challenge could be around the corner. If we continue this, it could be around the corner. So first and foremost...
What kind of corner? This season corner or next season corner?
I'm a realist at the end of the day, and I'm not going to sit here and say we are going to challenge for the Premier League title this year. But I've been proven wrong already with our form this season. Like Kevin said, 11 wins, 1 draw, 2 losses. If we were offered that at the beginning of the season, we would have taken that, smiling, happy.
I hear you. Kevin, as a former player yourself, what are the things that you see in the players that are still there, that were there last year, clearly not playing for Arsene Wenger, or underperforming, if I'm going to be fair, for Arsene Wenger, who are now performing? I'm looking at the Iwobis. I'm looking at... Ozil even is putting in more good games than he had under Wenger last season. I'm looking at Bellerin. I was a massive Bellerin hater. Can't stand Bellerin. I thought his delivery was awful, lacks concentration, always gets outrun someone that's really, really quick. He's been, I think, our best player in the last 3 games, I would argue. What as a former player are you seeing in some of those guys that are performing now that weren't 6, 8, 12 months ago?
I think there's a few things. First off is the manager and the message that the manager's sending. Obviously on the training pitch he's very good with them, and he works them hard, but they've got a structure now. And earlier on in the season, everybody, when Petacek was in goal, everybody was worried when they were trying to play out from the back, people saying they can't do it. But now that Leno's in goal, you can actually see what's going on. They've scored goals from the goalkeeper going all the way through opposition teams and putting the ball in the net. So you know that there's a structure there. I think we're crying out for a centre midfielder who can break things up like a Kante type, and now we've got Torreira. I think he makes everybody better. He makes the team so much better. Having that guy in there who can balance and break things up and put his body on the line, I think that's really important. But you know, the most important thing I see, as opposed to last season, I know Arsene Wenger used to talk about, you know, the team spirit, the team spirit, the team spirit. I could see the team spirit now shining. You know, we've never had a duo since probably Wright and myself days, where Lacazette and Aubameyang are. They look so tight, you know, on and off the pitch. And that's what brings the fans in. I mean, the game at Fulham was... I thought that was a special day, winning 5-1, but the fans were involved as well, and the fans could feel it. I think that's really important after the fan base was split last season. Mm. So, you know, there's little things. The little things all together make the big things.
I hear you.
And I think credit to Emery for getting everybody on the same page.
I hear you. So I've got to kind of play the role as a balance here, because I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast today, and it's a big Arsenal love-in. And if you get slapped 3-1 on Saturday by Liverpool, people will be saying, oh, all that talk and you got slapped by Liverpool, the first big team you've played.
No, it's not. No, it's not the first big team. Look, we played Manchester City and we've played Chelsea.
But we lost
Manchester
them both.
Manchester City were better than us.
Yep.
Chelsea, we should have dealt with Chelsea, but we didn't. They beat us in the end. So let's have it right. If Liverpool come to the Emirates and wipe the floor with us, that just shows us we're not quite ready yet. Mm-hmm. That's all at this stage.
It's actually not that bad when you think about it.
Liverpool are going to challenge. They are going to challenge, but I'd love to see Arsenal at the Emirates turn them over.
Yep.
Because I mean, when you think about it, you know, in his first two Premier League games, you've got the champions, and then with Chelsea, obviously new manager as well. But what he did was just bring in the key component of his tactic. Everyone else fits in. So the idea of stuff like, you know, Kante struggling playing right side of midfield, he played there before he even started at Leicester as a defensive midfielder anyway.
Mm.
So this is nothing new. And those two clubs settled as soon as those games were out of the way. He got his thing going. Now, if they do lose to Liverpool, Klopp had 3 seasons. That's kind of barometer I use. I say you got 3 seasons to set your team and then get them going.
Mm.
He's had his 3 seasons. He's got his team now. He's not complaining. He's got his boys in. He signed extra midfielders and he's got his defence, so he's got Van Dijk in. So if they were to win, it wouldn't be a big shock. And no Arsenal fans should be upset. Obviously, if you get wiped, then yeah, you're gonna be upset, of course. But in terms of the general picture of the season,
nothing's changed.
Don't stress about that too much, because there's a reason why they're up there, and there was a reason why you guys started to fall off. The manager's gone. You've got a new manager in. He's starting to get his things ticking now. Mm. If you lose against a team that has had their things ticking since last season, got to the Champions League final.
There's no shame in that, it's not that big a deal
to lose that game, to be honest,
because as fans we shouldn't get carried away with, like, look at the beginning of the season, our expectations were different for us to be questioning now whether this Liverpool game is a turning point in our season or something. We wouldn't have assumed this at the beginning of the season.
Exactly.
All we know is Emery came in as a manager, and I think the most difficult job you could get in football in terms of the fan base was so divided, the football was non-existent, there was no style of play, no structure, and he's done well. We've got to this stage where we are talking about the Liverpool game and saying, if Arsenal do get something for it, what's around the corner? So as fans, don't get carried away. That's what I say to fellow Arsenal fans, don't get carried away, because there's still going to be lows as well as highs to come. But the change has come, and that's what's...
So let me ask you, Turkish, I don't know about you, but for me, this might sound weird, but more important for me this year than the actual results is just enjoying watching my team again. Do you concur, or for you is it always about the results first and foremost?
Nah, it's funny you say that. You know, it obviously it comes down to results as well, because that gives you the feeling.
Yeah.
But I was walking down after parking up at Emirates for the Leicester game last Monday. I was walking up to the stadium. As I'm getting closer, you can hear the fans more and whatnot, see more people. And I was excited again. And that feeling of excitement, I haven't felt that for maybe 10 years.
Damn.
That feeling of going to a game and I'm excited about the game, unless it's a Barcelona or a Bayern Munich, where I'm excited about the game, but we get pumped 5-1. That sort of occurrence over and over again can suck the life out of you as a fan. So I was just going to games... just going to games because I support Arsenal, and yes, I want us to win, but it wasn't exciting anymore as a fan. So yeah, I was walking down the street and I felt that inside of me. I'm happy to, and I don't expect to win. We have no divine right to win the league as a fan, I can say that, but as Arsenal fans, we have a right for our team to challenge.
Okay, and Kevin, it seems to me like Emery is going for the Europa League as well. He's been playing some really strong teams and squads in those games. Do you think that's a smart move? Because it felt to me like Xhaka, who I'm not a big fan of, I actually think a left back has been pretty decent. That foul against Zaha, and to be fair, Zaha will bend up most men and get penalties because he's that good. But that foul to me smacked of tiredness. I think it's 3 games in a week in a non-regular position. Do you think that he should maybe prioritise the Europa League or the league? Or do you like that he's kind of balancing a little bit above?
Well, I think Arsenal have got they've got to go for everything. Because Unai Emery knows the Europa League very well. You know, he's won it three times on the trot, previously with Sevilla. And that is another way into the Champions League. So, European football, it might not be Champions League, but you know what? To win that trophy is still prestigious. And the prize at the end of it is huge. We don't know what's going to happen in the league. We don't know what's going to happen with injuries, etc., etc. So, if he can secure that trophy, I think that will be a masterstroke from Unai Emery. And why not go for it? Look, there's only four or five trophies you can win. Four trophies you can win in any season. So, go for them all.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. And just finally, Mike, I mean, you were talking a little bit about Emery making his imprint at his previous two clubs. Are Arsenal doing well this year because it's not Wenger? Or is Emery doing actually something unique that's getting this team going? Basically, if anyone come in, it's a new voice, it's new energy, it's a new face.
Yeah.
Does it really matter that it's Emery, or is Emery specifically doing something with this team that you think, no, it's Emery doing that? It's not just that it's not Arsene Wenger, it's Emery is putting his imprint on this team.
It's definitely Emery. I mean, if you look at the whole system of how he's just come in and he's changed small things, but he's made it's the impact of how you look at the players. I mean, small things like last couple of seasons under Wenger, you see you guys go 1-0 down against Crystal Palace, you're thinking, oh yeah, they're done, this game's finished, and then conceding when it's 2, you're up 2-1, make it 2-2, like, oh yeah, they're gonna lose this game.
There's a third coming,
you know what I mean, like, stuff like that. That kind of thing can stick with you for a long time as a player, because when you're in that situation, you look back at your players and you see heads down, you're like, oh, we're in trouble here. I don't see that with Arsenal, but that can only happen with the manager. The players can keep the same mentality. If the manager doesn't come and change anything, the manager has to change something. And he's doing his thing. Sevilla were a good team in Spain. He made them a great team in Spain because they went to a European competition and won it three times in a row. And that's not an easy competition to win. It's actually, for me, it's harder than Champions League in the sense of how many games you play, the days you play, and then what you have to go and do on the weekends after. It's hella difficult.
You think it's harder?
Oh, in terms of the stress of it, because there's a reason why English clubs hate it, because they can't deal with the fact that they have to play a game on a Thursday and then they have to go and play on a Sunday, home or away. They're not sure what they're going to do and they get stressed about it. Whereas in the Champions League, they feel a level of comfortability because you play on a Tuesday and Wednesday and then you get a 3 or 4 day break, and they like that.
It's psychological, you reckon?
Yeah, it's psychological.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And final one for you, Kevin. Be honest with me. If you're a Aubameyang and you're outscoring Lacazette but still eating bench, are you pissed?
You are, of course you are.
Or you're just happy for the team and your boy Laka's getting the goals and it's great and we love each other. No, you know, it's a rotation here. Secretly, you're Benin.
Yeah, he wants to play. But I think there's a buy-in. I think there's a buy-in from the players into what Emery wants to do. Look, Aubameyang started yesterday. So I think there's going to be times where Laka found himself out of the team early on. So me personally, I like the way Emery does his stuff. He ain't been playing. He's been dragging people off, which I know a lot of Arsenal fans have been happy with. If players ain't playing well, he takes them off.
Yeah.
And I think that has earned the respect in the dressing room, because if you're not performing, you're coming off the pitch. So Aubameyang, I think he will get a lot more games moving forward, but Emery, the way he builds his system to the opposition, he's getting maximum effect out of Aubameyang sometimes when he comes off the bench.
No doubt. I want to get a prediction for the weekend from all three of you, and also a final placing for Arsenal this season. I'll start with you, Kevin. Where will Arsenal finish this season?
I think Arsenal will finish fourth.
And
this season.
And Liverpool on Saturday?
2-1, Arsenal.
Ooh. Mike?
3-2, Arsenal. Arsenal finish third or second.
Third or second?
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah, but Turkish?
I'm going to go for fourth and 3-2. Arsenal.
Interesting. Okay, well, we will see. It's a big game for me, and in a weird way, I think the more important game is the game after Liverpool, because I think whether win or lose, it's how Arsenal follow up from losing to Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? I think the next game is the important one, because you'll lose games.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But Arsenal tend to lose and then lose and then lose and then lose. Yeah. It's like, okay, take the L, but we're going to go on another run now. Do you know what I mean?
If we bounce back against Wolves away, I think that's our game after Liverpool. Then
that's a tough game.
That's a tough game. If you bounce back there, Liverpool game's forgotten and you move on with the season.
I hear that. Listen, Kevin, just come on the FFP, man.
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
Nice one, but take care.
Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Nice. Cheers, boss. Nice one, Kev. Listen, before we go, tell us about your channel and your new show, Turkish.
Oh, yeah. Well, my YouTube channel, Turkish LDN TV, that's my personal one. I've got my own top six show on there. Obviously, I'll get you lot on there soon enough anyway. And AFTV, I've got a new show on there called The Supporters Club.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have Arsenal fans, the more well-known ones from AFTV, and then other people here and there. Hopefully get Kev on there, hopefully get Ian Wright on there one day, and just have a discussion that you can compare to Monday Night Football, to compare to the debate on Sky Sports, just create some sort of, you know, comparison out there.
Yeah, so make
sure you follow that and subscribe to that.
Where can they find it?
That show is on AFTV Media.
Okay.
Everyone knows that anyway, but my channel is Turkish LDN TV.
Wicked.
About that show, The Supporters Club, I watched the one where you're discussing Ozil.
Yeah,
it's a nice setting where you can sit down properly. You got three, two other fans or
three
other fans, and you just sit down, you just
talk
nicely, you know. It's a nice debate and everyone gets their turn. It was calm. I liked it, I enjoyed it.
Thank you. I obviously appreciate that support. That's what I do when I hear things like that, and you supported me even that time when you came to me for the Channel 4 first interview.
Yeah man.
You said, oh, I've seen you in the videos, and things like that make me think, oh, I need to do more then.
You're doing your thing, man. You're doing your thing. And Mike, Jose in?
No.
Should we chat about your pod instead?
Let's do that. Free Midfield is approaching episode 100 soon, so we're trying to keep growing, keep doing our thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can catch us on SoundCloud, iTunes, and FNX Network. We post every week. We talk about many things, dropped so many agendas. Recently we talked about Eden Hazard, that one was quite fiery. So we encourage all fans, doesn't matter who you support, we want you on our
check them out.
So yeah, come true and just talk football, man.
Go and check out their channels and podcast, guys, and you can follow our, if you don't follow already, follow us on Twitter, FFP. No, we're not, what are we, Antonio? We are Football Fans Pod. That's what we're on, Football Fans Pod. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Football Fans Podcast. Of course, we are also on iTunes. Follow us and subscribe to the podcast on there, Football Fans Podcast. Until next week, peace.